vulnerable young blue. No, you want the pillar, it's blocking hand. But she's at the far right of honorable young Bloom. You are most welcome, ma'am, and compliments of the new year. Honorable Velma, part of the furniture, we did receive your apology. Honorable members, it's for us to engage on the report, ask questions, and even you take us back to 2015, we'll be very patient with you, we understand. But I'll request that if it's something that has year gone, then when you respond, NYDA, Katu and your team, that you make it summary as possible, but also not also disadvantaging new members who have joined us. But I know they are familiar with your space, they will engage honorable members. We normally, honorable members, for the right that everybody speaks in this meeting, so we've got a pattern here. For now, I'll start from Honorable Ndombela, then Honorable Ndau, right to Honorable Young Bloom, and then Honorable Velma, Honorable Marvin, and Honorable Van der Waalt. Everybody. Kasim, I've noted you. It's just that I didn't pronounce your name loud. I'm sorry. But I make sure that I just want to make sure that everybody speaks. Honorable Ndombela, over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. Chair, my first question, or my clarity-seeking question, relates to the slides are not numbered. Program Area 5, governance. About the information dissemination access point. One is interested in knowing the detail thereof. What are the other points that did they target? But one would like to know where are those access points? How do they reach out as the youth? And Chair, I think it would also help us with a few examples to know which organs of state has been engaged, or private sector companies which have been engaged, that is in relation to Program Area 4. With regard to the number of youth in conflict with the law, the targets have not been reached as expected. One is interested in knowing what are the causal factors, because we're expecting synergy between state institutions or departments for that matter to work together. What are the causal factors to the below targeted performance? Furthermore, Chair, I'm interested in knowing the details of the Berry Box retail project that the NYDA launched in collaboration with the Evergreen Metropolitan Municipality. Who are the beneficiaries and how were they selected? I know for a fact that there are certain communities that were visited by the NYDA, but unfortunately, the aspirations of those particular communities were not met during that particular period. Are there mechanisms that are put in place to go back to those communities to say, we promised you 1, 2, 3, 4, but we couldn't make it. These are the reasons, and these are the plans to address what we promise you to. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, I'll defer to my colleague Karim to go before me. I'll speak after him.
I understand. Honorable Karim?
Chairperson, I'm going to start with asking a few clarity-seeking questions and making a few comments, I think, which is important. My first question, and it's more of a general question, I'd like to get the input from the colleagues from the NYDA. If we look at a lot of the targets that are set, and I know we're not dealing with the strategic plan of the entity, but a lot of it deals with numbers. We must have so many numbers of entrepreneurs, new entrepreneurs supported. We need to have so many established entrepreneurs supported, etc., and so forth. Is there any credence given to the quality of these kinds of support? And I'd like to get some more information with regards to what is the success rate of people that are being supported across the board, actually, not just as it pertains to small businesses and entrepreneurs, but actually it should apply to people who are studying with the assistance, whether it is in technical or vocational skills acquisition, whether it is in universities and higher education, but also in terms of what has that trend been over a set number of years. I would suppose we would establish a trend over the last 3 years of when the last board was in place. My second question, because, I mean, of course, we wouldn't, and my comment here, Chairperson, is we wouldn't want this to be a bean counting exercise. We would want it to be a meaningful outcome to the work that the entity is doing. My second question is as it relates to the programs which dissect with other departments. So, for example, and this is the ones that I've picked up from this report immediately, there may be others. But, for example, you have the higher education department that deals with financial assistance and also, by the way, deals with financial assistance and money that's contributed by other departments. So, for example, Funza Lushaka and those kinds of programs for assisting students or people pursuing skills in technical and vocational education. You've got the basic education department that should be assisting, you know, young people with second chances and rewrites of matric examinations. You've got the health department, and you've got the correctional services, etc. To what extent do these other departments have similar or duplicate programs that are being run by the National Youth Development Agency in terms of these targets that are being measured? So I'd like to know, and I'm surely the NYDA should know this. If we say that we want to assist X amount, as in the report, of young people to have a second chance of rewriting their matric in the fourth quarter, I think it was a relatively small amount. What exactly is that demand, as it stands? How is that being interacted by other departments, like the Department of Basic Education, and more generally, Chairperson, how are these individuals, the beneficiaries, being selected? Because surely there must be a massive demand across the country. There's only a limited number, 30 or so access points for the NYDA across the country. So exactly how do we prioritize, you know, these are the beneficiaries, and how do we dissect, if any, and I'd like to get, you know, the assertion of the NYDA in this regard, duplicate programs that exist in this regard. So those are my questions. It's very broad, and I'd like the NYDA chairperson, where possible, where they've got the information, if they don't have the information, to make that available to us after this in writing, but per target, as to say, this one, there are these deep duplicate programs, this is what the demand is, this is how people are being selected, etc.
Thank you. I'm not too sure whether it should be Honorable Young Bloom or Tebald.
Thank you very much. Just a couple of questions, an overview question. If you look on your slide number 4, you have achieved 62% of your targets. That would be in 3 quarters, right? Which means you have 38% to catch up with in the last quarter if you are going to do 100%. Question really is, and you have been expressing it very confidently that you'd probably catch up. Would the bulk of that be as a result of the Solomon Mahlangu scholarship that was delayed because of the issues that you raised? And would that also have been affected by the non-achievement of the target under health and well-being? In other words, if you did in the last quarter what you believe you will be doing, those two would go some way towards hitting that 100% target. And coupled with that, the question has to do with the health and well-being thing that I was talking about, having missed the target with SAB and stuff like that. Is this about alcoholism and drug addiction? So if that's the case, what impact does this kind of thing have? Because it's one of those things. You probably know now that we are now one of the drug centers of the world, and alcoholism is quite high. We are the biggest consumers, so that would have an impact. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Kiaplong, over to you, Ma'am.
Chair, it is young blood, young blood.
Okay,
thanks. With reference to slide number 6, and I think the question has been asked in a different format, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I would like to know, you know, it looks very impressive if you see that the target with regards to establishing entrepreneurs have been met and exceeded. What I would like to know is a little bit more information as to the sustainability of these business ventures. The NYDA has been involved in, and do they track the development of these businesses? Then with regards to slide, where am I now? No, this is a general question. If you listen to the presentation, the NYDA seems to be doing a lot in the line of empowering young people in terms of training, scholarship programs, job programs. What I would like to know is then what? What happened to all these trained people? Because if you look at the national unemployment figures, it seems to indicate that most of the, is it 9 million unemployed people at the moment, are among the youth. If there could be some response to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Young Blood. Are we back? Honorable
Panerbat? Chair, I'm not sure if I should now be the old blood. My Google. Chair, thank you for the welcoming to this new committee. Without being repetitive, I would just like to know these programs, for the sake of the new members as well as the new year, if we could sometime get it from the relevant officials per province. I think it will be quite helpful if we would know how they are run in each province. And then I didn't bring a calculator. And I would know what exact percentage of your budget is allocated to salaries, because I think there is some sort of a norm in government above which it should not go. And then all your KPIs, as was said by a colleague, is about numbers. Now, numbers are very important when you want to empower the youth, but it's also about the quality and the outcomes. That is very important, and I think I agree with the question that we should know what happens. Do they fall out the system? How many have been successfully taken up in further education, and especially in the economic world? That will help to understand the programs much better. And, Chairperson, I'll leave it at that for the first round. Thank you.
Thank you so much. There will be no second round. Honourable Velma, you want to take a bite? I know you joined us a little bit late. I assume you have read the document.
Chair, thank you very much. Thank you to the NYDA for that presentation. Just relating to the evaluation, I think it's the achievement of that, the content of that what is hard, what do you evaluate? And then on the Wi-Fi, the output thereof it, at all your branches, I'm becoming worried that, you know, when I read that some cities want to cut that project, or not yours necessarily, but the Wi-Fi project from theirs, the youth are very concerned because they need those Wi-Fi zones in terms of applications for jobs, to send CVs. But now I read that some cities want to cut that. Where will there be intervention from your side to say, look, we cannot do that? What intervention can you make in terms of that, not to cut those Wi-Fi free zones? Because we need, I mean, obviously we all agree that the youth need access to that. Okay. And then just one more question, Chair, please. We spoke about the wellness. And Honourable Motove spoke about drug addiction and alcoholism, etc. I'm also in addition worried about HIV and AIDS. People think that, you know, years and years ago we've had all these big programs, etc., things are getting better, but the new generation of youth, we still have the prevalence there. You know, they don't care about it, or they do not know about the prevalence of HIV and AIDS. Where are you guys, the NYDA, in this, in terms of awareness raising, training, etc., related to HIV, AIDS, to the youth sector? I just can't remember which side it was, but in terms of disability intervention, in terms of wellness, there's nothing there. And I want to encourage that as well, that the disability intervention in terms of wellness, etc., is again then awareness, training, etc., regarding HIV/AIDS. Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you. Honourable Martin, over to you, sir.
Look, Honourable Chair, I came very, very late, and I want to apologise for that there. So I missed most of the presentation. And if you assume that I've read the document, you have assumed also wrong. I've not read the document too, so I will rather hold my peace for the time. Thank you.
Let it be, Honourable Member. That's quite unfortunate that I'm wrong. Having said that, if you can just assist us, you also in your presentation there's somewhere that it speaks about recrafting your annual performance plan, as it were, in terms of shifting somewhere. So what I would like to know, would that shifting make any impact in terms of changing of your plans, in terms of your predetermined? Mind you that there are due processes that if you change your annual performance plan, has it gone through the structure that's supposed to be, and exactly what was the intention of recrafting the plan as indicated in terms of your presentation? Secondly, I'm sure DPME CEO, Mr. City, you'll take this one also. Don't you think that it's the Act also is supposed to be reviewed? Why I'm raising that is in relation to the questions that the honourable members have asked, and even the collaboration with other departments around the issue of health and related matters, to say that because the Act doesn't allow you to collaborate with the actively with the provincial and local government as it were. Although I am fully aware that you do have MOUs with municipalities, but it's discretionary of the municipalities that they feel like. And I'm saying probably by now you should have been looking at that space, so that also you can also respond to the NDP expectations. Also for the benefit of the new members, have you now have confirmed organogram that relates to the question in terms of the split of the actual mandate of the NYD and also expenditure to the operations in terms of the administration costs and all that? Could you just tell us in terms of the financial balancing of that? Also just to recap for the benefit of the members in terms of the restructuring that you have embarked on, and also give us a sense if there's any sense of comfort that there are no disgruntled employees that are going to sue the organization, as it were. The other point that I would like to... for now, I'll leave it there. And if it elaborates the report that we're asking, then you do it in writing. Noting that also, I will be very much interested in that Excel spreadsheet that will talk to the beneficiaries and the provinces and all those things. If it can zoom also directly to the municipalities, and I know it will speak also to the wards if we can get that one, and also just respond to us, when should we expect that? How long can it take you as well? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Indeed, what we'll do is we will give a brief response to the questions. Some of them will require that we provide additional information in writing to be able to substantially give confidence to the honourable members. I'll quickly run through the points that have been raised by honourable members. Issues raised by Honourable Ntombela, the issue of access points. The access points are mainly conducted in partnership with local municipalities. What we have done is that we sign agreements with the municipalities, and the municipality will provide office space. Previously, we used to ask the municipalities to second a person who can man the office, but we have experienced challenges in that most municipalities also have financial challenges. So many of those offices were basically, you know, a white elephant. They were standing there with nobody there to service the young people. But what we have done is that we went and engaged a services sitter who were kind enough to go into a partnership with us to support an internship program. So as we speak, we have about 116 local municipalities where there are young people, the interns, that are working there on a full-time basis with the support of the services sitter. So we are at this point in negotiations with the services sitter to renew the agreement and also to increase the intake. Those discussions are underway. We are hoping that we'll conclude those by the end of February, and when we start the new financial year, we will be continuing with that program of the internship, but also increasing it so that we increase our reach to other local offices. The indication of the organs of state and private sector, we will provide this the list of partnerships that we have, both for private sector, public sector, and civil society organizations in writing. We should be able to do that within the 2 weeks period from today. Young people in conflict with the law, the challenge here has been to get cooperation from the correctional services centers. But I must say that the progress that we have reported was achieved through engagements with the correctional services at a national level. And we were confident that we have been able to find a workable relationship with them. So we are not anticipating challenges moving forward, this is why we've been able to get these centers to be able to work with. We think that that program will be working well moving forward. As it relates to the Body Box project, which we have partnered with the city of Ekurhuleni, as well as the Body Box company, the beneficiaries here, are selected through an open invitation for young people who have an interest in entrepreneurship and specifically in this particular kind of a program. The recruitment is done in partnership with the city itself and Body Box. So all young people within the Ekurhuleni area have an opportunity to participate in that particular program. The communities that have been visited, we keep a log of all communities that we visit and all the commitments that have been made, and there's always a follow-up program which we undertake, and we will be continuing to do that to make sure that all commitments that are made are attended to within the financial year. And then the issues that were raised by Honorable Karim, the question of numbers versus quality, we take this matter very seriously. That is why, for the first time in this 2016-2017 financial year, we put in a KPI target which speaks to programs and projects monitoring and evaluation reports.
The idea is to go and evaluate all these programs, going to the ground, tracing the beneficiaries of these particular programs over a number of years to assess whether the projects are working or they are achieving the intended objectives, so that we can be able to come to a determination of what improvements needs to be done, or maybe should we discontinue this particular program. As I've indicated when I was reporting on the performance, unfortunately we struggled to find the service providers to assist us with this particular work, but now we have those service providers that we got from DPME, and the work is currently underway. All major programs of the NYD are currently being reviewed. What we could do, Chair, is that once those reports are released, we can then share them with the portfolio committee so that the portfolio committee have a sense of the impact of this particular program and what are the findings of this evaluation. So we will certainly do that as and when that information becomes available.
It's Honorable Kasim. Karim is the older
one. Sorry, yeah, Honorable Kasim. And then on the question of collaboration and duplication, we try by all means to avoid duplication. In fact, when we map out our programs, we try to map the value chain within government. For an example, if I can make example of the two programs with basic education, when it comes to career guidance, for example, we make a deliberate effort to target rural schools so that we try and address areas which basic education is not necessarily very active in. And when it comes to a program like a second chance matric grant program, ours was really to try and pilot a program which is not only focused on the academic part of it, because typically what basic education will do is simply to provide education, whereas ours goes beyond just the lecturing part. We also provide life skills training there, job preparedness program there, but also the technique in how we do it, who is focused on the techniques of passing the matric examination. So a lot of focus is spent on assisting young people to be able to say, how do you read an exam question to understand it properly? How do you translate your information that you have in your head into putting an answer which will earn you maximum marks and those kinds of things? So the focus is slightly different. But because we have implemented the program for a number of years, we have now taken a decision to hand over this particular program to basic education so that they can mainstream it and take it to scale, because they have the resources. Because we have limited resources, we're only doing about 3,500 young people, and with the support of EDTP CETA, we were able to add 1,500. So we're up doing just about 5,000 every year. But if you look at it, I mean, if you look at the stats, which would suggest that about 500,000 learners will sit to write an examination, only about 300 pass, it then tells you that almost every year you have about 200,000 young people who in some way or the other require this type of intervention. But basic education then have the capacity to then take this program to scale, which we are handing over to them. So we try and avoid duplication as much as possible. And the selection process of the beneficiaries is that we identify centers working with basic education, and then we run advertisements both on radio and print media for young people to be able to apply to be admitted in the particular center. So all young people where we have centers have an equal opportunity to be able to be part of those particular programs. And the question from Honorable Mutau, indeed the reason for the lower performance is mainly around the programs that I've indicated to be behind. The program on policy and research. A lot of evaluation work is only happening now because of the challenges of service providers that I've indicated. Indeed, the shortfall from the SAB Pro partnership had a greater impact on that, but equally those programs that are by nature implemented in the fourth quarter, like the matric right and the SMF, as it were. And the impact really of health and well-being, because of the limited resources that we have, we only select focus areas at a particular point in time. And our focus area for now has been substance and alcohol abuse, mainly informed by challenges that we're seeing with Wunga and Nyaupe and all those kinds of things. But what we do is we lobby specifically the Department of Health, and we do some work with LoveLife as well to also champion the other areas of health and well-being. With LoveLife specifically, the areas, the issues that were raised by the honourable member around HIV and AIDS, that work is happening mainly through the collaboration work that we do with LoveLife, as it were. And then the issues raised by honourable Young Blood, the sustainability of supported businesses. What we do is we have outreach officers who then conduct site visits on a monthly basis to all the beneficiaries of the NYDA program, specifically the grant program, who are able to track what challenges these young people are experiencing and provide interventions when necessary through our non-financial products and services that we offer to young people. But broadly speaking, the sustainability, we had done a preliminary review of our grant program a year ago, where we traced the beneficiaries, the first beneficiaries of the NYDA grant funding program when we started with this program 3 years ago. And the report at the time had suggested that at least 53% of the beneficiaries of the NYD were still operating their businesses beyond 12-month period, which was just above the national average of 22% sustainability beyond 12 months by about 30%, which gave us a sense that there's something that is working with the program. But again, like I said, we will be doing a more detailed review of the grant funding program together with the other programs, and now with the evaluations program that I've spoken about, which as I've committed, we will be sharing the outcomes of those evaluations with the portfolio committee as and when they become available. And the issues raised by Honorable Velma, the Wi-Fi project, we have actually concluded the project of making all NYDA offices Wi-Fi hotspots, such that young people, when they come to the offices, they don't necessarily only rely to the internet cafes that we have established in the offices, but they can be able to access the net using their own cell phones there. And as it relates to the decisions of the other cities in relation to the availability of Wi-Fi, all we can do is lobby and advocate for the necessity of that particular service, and hope that those issues can then be taken into consideration. And I think I've spoken to the issue of HIV and AIDS, and the focus on disabilities. We are focusing on this. That is why, for the first time in this APP that we're reporting on, we have put an allocated number, and as we go along, we will be making sure that we improve on it and we increase the target as well, so that we're able to reach more young people who are living with the disabilities. And then the issues raised by yourself, Chair, on the shift of the APP. The shift of the APP is in relation to the APP for 2017-2018. We're still going to bring that APP here to the portfolio committee to take you into confidence of the changes. Safe to say that the only focus areas or the determinants of change or in the shift is that through the guidance of the Transitional Accounting Authority, we sought to focus mainly on job creation and sustainable enterprises for young people as a way of responding to the triple challenges of unemployment, poverty, and inequality, which by and large affect young people. So that will be the shift of the focus that you will see when we do come here to present the APP, and also the amplifying and increased focus on National Youth Service, because the intention is to make National Youth Service the single biggest youth development project for the entirety of government and the country moving forward. And then as it relates to the Act, the review process, the review process of the Act is sitting with the Ministry. I think that the proposals that have been made to amend the Act, which include taking the Act from Section 76 to 77 so that it can give presence in provinces and local level, has been made,
But I think the PME can speak a little bit there as it relates to the process that will be taken forward. The Deputy Minister had established a task team, which we were participants in, but I think there is now the process of taking further steps to ensure that that bill eventually lands in Parliament. But I think Dr. Hlakala can speak a little bit on it from the Deputy Minister's point of view in terms of the plans moving forward. And we do have a confirmed organogram now post the restructuring program that we have undertaken. The previous board, before they left office, had approved that new organogram, which is now in line with the rationalization of the merger that happened between the Umsobomvu Youth Fund and Youth Commission many years ago, but equally the new focus of the organization, as it were. And indeed, we do have, from the 76 employees who took voluntary severance packages, there are about 30 employees who have engaged us through their lawyers, who are querying the tax that has been deducted from their VSP packages. They are saying that because they took VSPs, their view is that they should be treated as retrenched employees. However, when we did the payouts of the VSP, we had asked SARS for individual tax directives, and SARS was clear to us to say that they treat VSP as a voluntary resignation. They don't treat it as retrenchment, therefore it's taxed as a voluntary situation. And those colleagues, former colleagues, are engaging with us. We have said that ours really is to try and clarify and support them when necessary. But we think that the discussion really needs to be taken with SARS, because we only acted on the directives that we received from SARS. So that is just an issue to highlight, as it were. I think, Chair, we can commit to say that as we did last year, we will compile a list of all beneficiaries of all NYDA products and services across the board, across the province, across the regions, across the world where possible, so that we can share that list with the members of the portfolio committee, so that the portfolio committee can see who benefited in what program, in which provinces, in which areas, and so on and so forth. And that too, we will submit in a period of 2 weeks from now. Thank you very much. And the last question, which relates to the percentages of salary, I'll allow the CFO to just conclude with it, as he will reflect on where we were before the restructuring and where we are now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, CEO. I'll just take a minute to explain the history of the salary allocations of the NYDA. So we would have found that we had human resource issues beyond just a perceived high salary bill of the organization. With the merger of Umsobomvu and the National Youth Commission, there were challenges relating to HR in that there were duplicate functions in the organization. There were job descriptions that were not properly aligned to the mandate of the organization. So the previous board would have undertaken a project to correct the human resource challenges that the NYDA as an organization was facing, amongst them a high salary bill. In 2014-15, we reported a salary bill of 176 million against a allocation from National Treasury of 408 million rand. So of our allocation, 43% was being allocated towards employee costs. When we restructured, and that took place during financial year 2015-2016, during that year we spent 209 million rand of our 409 million rand allocation on salaries. But that year was a specific anomaly because of the number of severance packages that were taken to reduce employee costs in the long term. We had to pay out a significant amount of voluntary settlement packages. And that you'll often see that number being reported, that the NYDA spent more than 50% of its budget on salaries. That was because in that financial year we implemented the restructuring program. National Treasury's guideline has always been that your salary expenditure must not breach 40% of your allocation. In 2016-17, the financial year that we are currently in, our salary bill makes up 145 million rand of a 405 million rand allocation. So we've brought down employee cost expenditure to 35% of total allocation. Had we not restructured the organization, we would have been close to 50% of entire allocation with increases that are inflationary-based increases. So we're really saving 15% through our restructuring program. All of those costs have been redirected into projects of the organization. So it hasn't been transferred to administration. It's going directly into projects of the organization.
Thank you so much. Doctor, I would request that without suppressing you, where is she? By the pillar. Okay, no, it's fine. No, I'll request that probably we manage it this way, DG. That you take that one, because it resides in your office in terms of the ministry, as it were, without putting her in the spot. But having said that, we would like to get that amendment in our lifetime, which is 2019, not beyond, because it won't add value to us. We raise the issue, it has to be, so I would say on those ones, if even any other act that needs to be reviewed and also go parliamentary process, let's get that in our... just for information in our next engagement with DPME, just a schedule of those ones and where they are and when do we envisage this should come to Parliament, because we still have to do our own in-house public hearings as well. With that, honourable members, if there would be any other follow-up that we wish to make, I would suggest that, not now, I would suggest that we do them in writing and then they'll respond, but we use this Secretariat in terms of that. But also I'll say that we will, when we plan at a management meeting, hopefully I'll be still acting on that one, to ensure that we do get a presentation which is fully, we have planned to have a workshop before the end of this term, which is before end of March, before we go for recess for March, so that all members can have a benefit of information. But also, content advisor, I'll suggest that any other information in terms of other attachment of flats and all that, that you may think, I'll also think and see which one we think that new members will not necessarily have them ordinarily. We also supply them, just to make sure that also they are on speed. In particular, for the BRRR, also it will assist for the current administration time. If they can get that, it will really help a lot for them to benefit in some of the issues that we have been engaging on. The rest then we'll get them in 2 weeks' time in writing, and I hope it will satisfy our expectation on that. Thank you so much. With that note, that brings me to SG Stats SA. Say, over to you. You're mostly, no, in terms of my program, you don't have a program. So in terms of the program that I have before me, which is our master plan. I know, but you are the foundation, so you must hold them up. No, I know, because we must take the cue from you, but I'm saying that the way it's prepared here, I would like us not to disorientate ourselves. No, you must hold them to the top. It's very important. Yeah. Don't end up leading your jacket. SSA, you are mostly welcome with your team. And I will also as well suggest that I know you have been listening in terms of the approach which will help us, but also talk to those issues that we would like to hear. We have been very busy in the media and all those things, and also if there are any slight changes in your slide, also you'll direct us and we'll listen to you. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and honorable members and colleagues from other departments. Let me try and clarify an issue, because it needs to be clarified that, as they say, it's a department on its own, established under Act of Parliament, and a vote. So I think that has to be clear, that we have a very close working relationship with DPME, and a necessary working relationship. So, Madam Chair, the report as we have it here and there. I suppose you can see that we say statistics a conduit of trust, and it projects into NDP 2030, and that's the relationship. We would like to use this particular representation going forward, because it really should help us with DPME in terms of the DPME managing issues of the state, the planning, the monitoring and evaluation. And they have to really harness that from the statistics that we produce. So what are the contents? We have changed a little bit on the content slide, which is the delivery on key projects, organizational and financial performance, financial position of state SA, which is a matter that is in discussion anyway with the minister and the treasury. And then, of course, impact, informing the NDP and the SDGs. So what have we done in this quarter? Second quarter, we delivered the community survey, as you'll recall. The chair was there when we opened the new building, and it's a good facility that should, in time, serve as well on imaging or digitization of government records, because we have built the capability to do so. And the launch of the Department of Home Affairs digitization was part of that program. And I think the members, honorable members, have to be alive to this, because that digitization brings to life records, about 286 million records, and that is almost South Africa's population from time around the 1800s. And going forward, that will ensure that these records are on the same platform. And once you have digitized, you can retrieve, you can use, you can store, and you don't have to go on stand on ladders on shelves to try and get pieces of paper. It eases doing work, and in the words of the Minister of Home Affairs, it removes the pain from the client. And that's what this whole digitization is about. And then, of course, reweighting the CPI. Legislative reform is still in progress as we are consulting with different countries. But central to it, this legislative reform, is the question of data revolution, digital data, the fourth revolution, as we call it. That is very, very crucial, Madam Chair. One of the things that the data revolution poses is what are the governance arrangements around digital stage. I think that's a very crucial thing that South Africa has to be alive to around the governance of that. Now, in terms of performance, there are delayed outputs, and I think those are the ones that should worry you and should worry us. To get comfort is that they'll still be delivered this year. And the causes of delays are, we have two levels at which we report. There's a level at which we have a statistical theory, and there are 233 of those. Those are delayed. That is the second layer, which helps us to work with DPME very closely. For instance, the report on education that he released yesterday is an important report that Dr. Matuna should be looking when he talks to the Department of Education. He must be saying, this report says the following. What are our plans? And the delays are in those kinds of documents because we have to analyze, bring a lot of data, and then place before the planning ministry. to interact with other sector ministries. That I think is beginning to form, and I think it has a lot of promise. So those are where most of the delays are. But we are addressing that. All these reports will be delivered on time. In the book that we circulated last week, because this has been circulated last week as a quarterly report, I may just digress a little bit to say that in the report we do illustrate what are the reports that have been delayed. One of them is page 9, and there we are outlining what has been delayed on page 9, and we will see the nature of the reports. It's, for instance, a release on the poverty profile and the expenditure patterns in South Africa. We released it, but there is still work on poverty profile. Water and sanitation, that we delivered in November. Social and reports on improving social and household service delivery statistics, including the poverty reports that we have. So those reports are very crucial for the Department of monitoring, planning, monitoring, and evaluation. So those are the reports that have been delayed, but they will still be delivered in this financial year. What have we done on expenditure? I think we are on track on expenditure. We were at, in the next slide, we'll talk to that. In the third quarter, we achieved 79%. 79% of this have been achieved on schedule. 17% have been delayed, and I talked to what has been delayed. 13% have been achieved early. So now, looking at actual expenditure in quarter two, we were about 2 percentage points above 50%, and in quarter three, we are two percentage points below what is expected, and I'm sure we are on course to deal with this. This slide just discusses the kinds of imminent risks, but as I said, these are discussions going on with the Treasury and the Minister, and these are matters that should be resolved, but it's just to share the information on the risks that they carry, and if the risks were to materialize, these are the kinds of areas where we would have that would impact on the strategy. But as I said, these are things that are taken care of. Madam Chair, that's where we are. Perhaps in relation to NDP, how does this inform the NDP? The report that we released recently on expenditure patterns says that South Africans spend 1.7 2 trillion rand, and their income is 2.3 trillion. And 12.9% of this is on food and non-alcoholic beverages. One of the things that is in that report, I'm just pulling this for yourselves to have a view around how these reports that we compile are useful. One of the things that is happening is that the Free State in 2005 income and expenditure survey was spending 4% on alcohol. Now that number for both 2011 and 2016 has come up to 8%. The expenditure in the Free State now is 8% on alcohol. And one has to think about that economy of the Free State, in Merafong, Welkom, and all those areas. And then, of course, transport is about 16%, and housing 32%. So if you take housing, transport, and food, you are already talking 64% expenditure.
Now, in the world of where we have education and other things, what then remains for investment in those if households have spent so much on food, on housing, and particular at housing and transport? And if you look at the spatial configuration, it still remains very much the one that he inherited. And over a period of 22 years, this thing is being reinforced. And these two expenditure points of housing and transport characterize South Africa. And if you look at areas like Gauteng, 36% is on housing. And even a small province like that one, in terms of geographic size, expenditure on transport is still very high. So as the plan moves forward, the question would be, how do we ensure that these two actually become, don't rob us of our capacity to do things? Another area that this information gives is the continuing inequality in South Africa. Importantly amongst blacks, where the level of inequality is very high, but at a very low base of income. And that is not good for social cohesion. So this is what the report raises. And of course, this is the expenditure from 2006 to 2015 in terms of housing and electricity, transport, food, recreation and culture, education, 2.5 and so on. And then, of course, by province, this is how the expenditure is. It's largely in the Western Cape here, 163,000, and 140 in Gauteng. And other provinces in the 60s, the Free State, 85,000. So I think the data that we have just gives, this report gives the nature of reports that we'll be producing in the service of the Department of Planning and Monitoring and Evaluation. And we are paying very, very specific attention to the central role that department has to play, and we have to provide this data so that they should be able to ask important questions in the plan, and then they can structure and position themselves to monitor the functions of government. And I think we are working very well with them to pursue that. So, Madam Chair, that's my story from Saturday.
Thanks for your story, honourable members. We've seen the figures they've had in terms of their performance and also a commitment that they will fulfill and meet their predetermined objectives, notwithstanding a little bit behind. It's up to us members to engage on the report or comment, rather, not just to engage, make comments, and then we can close the SSA presentation. I'll start to Honorable Dow. Right to the end, far right of Honorable van der Walt, then followed by Honorable Ntombela, closed by myself from, I know I'll check so that I'm sure, in case you get appetized in the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is really a comment on the consumption of alcohol in the country. I've touched on it earlier. We have a huge problem in the country, and you just referred to it in your presentation about this disparity between groupings. When you present to cabinet this kind of information, what kind of reaction do you get? Because my fear is that as the inequality increases, more and more people get desperate, more and more people get into consuming alcohol, and as you saw the state, you would know about it, that we are a high consumer of alcohol. Where does it take us? Where do we go? What happens? Because we have got to turn this thing around so that we can create wealth, so that more people can get a sense of usefulness or worth in life, and then maybe get away from these other things that are dragging us down. Is there anything that you guys are able to do in terms of influencing this change of trend? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. It seems as if the department is not doing very well in terms of the employment of women and people with disabilities. Maybe that can be explained if there is a strategy in place to rectify the situation. And then the second question relates to the signing of performance contracts, which according to the report stands at 71%. I would like to know why isn't it at 100%? Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair, thank you. Well, I see at least we get clean audit reports, which is a nice to have. But I'm not going to ask a question, however, and it's much broader than Stats SA, is how do we change that the other provinces get up to the Western Cape and Gauteng? And that, of course, is a much broader governance issue and the economy. So I'll go and study, Chair, and come back with questions.
Okay, do that.
Thank you very much, Chair. Can I take this opportunity to congratulate State South Africa on the new building and the quality of services that's going to be provided there? Chairperson, my first question is the release of statistical data impacts on the mandate of other government authorities. Does State South Africa invite other departments affected when publishing statistical data, especially if results impact on their core mandate? The essence of my question is, how best can we position State South Africa in such a way that it becomes the integral part of any and all the departments with regard to their planning? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Honourable Chairperson. I just want to find out the issue of alcohol consumption. As a country, not as a province, as a country, the consumption of alcohol, have you done comparison studies with other countries? Where do we rank as compared to other countries if such information is available? Thank you.
You are covered. I know with the 250%, you are covered. But I would like to add on that question also the issue of young people. Honourable Doc, do you want to come back?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for your indulgence. I also am a bit worried about the perception that we have in terms of alcohol and drug consumption in our country. Where are we in terms of statistics? Are we a drug center? As some other people explain it, or Dadem Dao has alluded to that. And the information that we have is that there are countries that are vice prone in terms of consumption of drugs, and South Africa does not feature as very high in the list, because of course the Czech Republic, the Slovenia, and other countries, United States of America being number 16, and South Africa features as number 38. The perception that we have is like we are very high, we rank very very high, and that's it's not necessarily the case. Thank you, Chair. But I think South Africa will clarify that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Just a small addition. Also, do you have the stats on the age group? Which age is it? The young teenagers? Is it middle age? Is it elderly? What age group is actually consuming this amount of alcohol?
And I'm sure SG will respond in, with authority, but picking up from Honorable Dow, that this morning at Radio SNM, which I thought also is a person that deals with that, I thought he speaks to the authority, he said was the intense in terms of drug abuse. South Africa was the first, but nevertheless, I'm just saying that with what I heard over the radio this morning, then there must be something, and we rely on SG to respond to that. But I should have done this one. It's not because of jealousy, SG. That recently we had through DPSA awards performing our excellence awards awarded by DPSA to you, and you are the most, the best performing government entity department, and would like to say the best runner up on the best functioning national department in South Africa, not internationally, in South Africa. We really appreciate that, and I'm sure that wrapping shoulders with DPME, also DPME and DPSA within the family of this oversight here, they will do alike. It's just unfortunate that NYTA, they didn't give them the award this time around, but we know also you did receive at least from the AG, which was good as well, but well done on that space, AG, and make sure that you don't allow us to change your performance in either way. Having said that, as the other departments, because I know that you more often also interact with Treasury, but also other departments such as, which are more topical from where I'm sitting, your water department, your agriculture in terms of food security, do they ever call you to make a presentation? If not, then we will from our side as the portfolio committee encourage them when we do our oversight in terms of across the departments of our country, that we make sure that we pick up those things so that also they can talk to the states, because even last year when you made a presentation around the allocation of funds, while it's topical, the education is a topical issue, but in terms of allocation and a focus, a deliberate focus, and I'm sure with the statement that you have made now, we are moving towards the right direction with the relationship that we have now with the basic education, as it were, currently moving forward, and I'm sure that's what we are. But there are these other areas that, from where I'm sitting, I would like to hear something, not today, but so that also you give us a very scientific response on that one. And I'm sure also DPME will pay attention to that. The other one, and I'm happy that you make a very pronounced reference to the NDP, but as you deliver the steps in terms of other departments, do you also direct their attention? Because currently the NDP is not a program-based one. It highlights the areas of focus. And it's not like how it's going to be implemented structural programs. And I think your product needs to get a structure, a formal structure that it needs to talk to, so that the department also, they can also relate to that one, because there's a little bit from where I'm sitting, a disjuncture in terms of responding to the NDP, as it were, in terms of its expectation and also the areas of focus. The other one that I forgot, which I'm sure you will also, when you do also look at what NYDA is dealing with in terms of checking whether the figures that are giving us are also the real figures. I'm not saying that I'm doubting NYDA, but in terms of the issues responding to the young people's economic plight also within the space of industrialization, as you highlighted that most of South Africans spend more money in transport, which means as a country, in terms of subsidizing public transport in this way, because we didn't even break it down to that, at what category in the space or a sector of communities of South Africa that are spending more. And from where I'm sitting, my assumption, I'm wrong, that's why I'm carefully using the word assumption, is the lower income and the beneficiaries of the grants that we provide as a country. But with that, May you respond where you feel you have to respond, where you have also to provide in writing. You do so. Members, I must say that the building is art of the South African art, actually. And also where it's situated, it's within a more or less, lacking for a better word, I don't want to say a dilapidated area. But what it does then, it encourages other departments and other business investment also to rehabilitate that area. It's quite a very low level. That's why also in terms of securing the land, it was more or less a reasonable, I don't want to say cheap, a reasonable amount. But I'm just saying that they were trying to be where people are so that it's more accessible even to the internship and everybody that wants the information in terms of archives and all those things. I must say I was very much impressed. Other than that, over to you, sir.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I have a team of people here. To my left is Celia de Klerk, strategy, Ashwell Deneka, SSI, support and informatics, Mr. Gavalileke, provinces, international relations, statistical development, communications, and marketing. Faisal is the person who deals with communications and information. So I have this team with me here. And they will help me answer some of the questions. But let me start from the questions that you've asked, Madam Chair, because they really relate to how we got in the architecture of the state and how that it should function, and I'm sure that Madonna will elaborate a lot more on that one. I think we have been in discussing with him and DPME that we need to really get the architecture right so that the planning is very clear. And when we start producing the statistics, you see the gaps. Yes, the National Development Plan and overarching, but now the actual planning, how does it occur? Where does it occur? It has to occur, of course, directed by planning. I think there is a long way there. There's a lot that needs to be jacked up. And I think by using the data that we have, that helps. And the intrinsic close working relations are very necessary. So that's what we are working on. And I think when we do that, then it will form that formal structure that you are looking at. And that formal structure, then we can actually put at the service of different departments, both in terms of the plan and what are the anticipated outcomes of the plan. And then the measurement that says, well, by the way, this is where we are. I mean, one of the things that is very worrying is the notion that we are doing very well or even better at graduate level, that the blacks have doubled. That's not good enough to say that they are doubling. I mean, if you double from a low base, what does it mean? It means nothing, because when you actually look at progression ratios, you see that we are not doing terribly well. Even when you double, you realize that we are doubling from a low base and we will not win this war. So with the report that we released yesterday, it does say a lot about how the plan should be. Of course, the National Development Plan says a number of things around how many graduates should be there, but the plan in education itself should talk to the National Development Plan, should talk to issues of jobs, should talk, and the planning function at DPME has to be checked up and supported so that they actually do the work they are supposed to do, and then we give it the statistics that is required. One of the things that we have already in place with DPME is how do we use the national account as a low-hanging fruit that helps to establish the framework for planning. how do we use the supply and use tables as already existing information to buttress planning? How do we use the social accounting matrix, which is already existing information, to look at who are the beneficiaries of the plans? So, and how do we use the growth accounting framework to get the planning framework to look at the what if scenario? So all these tools are there in State SA, and then we do so because we have to assure the quality of the statistics. But that body of work that is there is available to be used in the planning. So that form of structure. So I thought that I should emphasize that point. Interactions with Treasury are necessary. The function of statistics has to provide a crystal ball of what is happening. And the Treasury has to really pay attention to that, that crystal ball. Because through the data, when you look at it, you can see where duplication is happening. And with information technology, there is a lot of wastage that can happen in government, particularly spatial data, geographic information systems. What is very important is what has happened. Spluma is now with LPME. And the fact that it has moved there is very crucial. Now, we, in our legislative reform, as they say, in terms of design, we have to embed Spluma so that it is enabled to deal with these issues of transport and housing, for an example. So that shift in Spluma is a tectonic shift and requires that we actually work. So the formal structures, I think, are beginning to gel. What we need is to move with speed to ensure that we backtrack them and they drive. So we are quite happy about that. Food security, agriculture. Madam Chair, when I got appointed in 1995, 1996, a person by the name of Big Marwa, big man Marwa, came with mass puller to my office. They wanted an agricultural census. We are still looking for an agricultural census to this day. So some of the things deal with priorities. This thing has never been prioritized. I think we are going ahead now. But it's a bit late, because we are supposed to have run this agricultural census in 2011. After we ran the census, because the census will have given us a frame of households that we should go to. Now, we don't have those. So the agricultural census is going to be very expensive, because we are starting again from scratch. Whereas if we did it immediately after the census, we had the frame and would target. Now we got target. We have to go into a very expensive exercise. Hopefully it will happen, and obviously it has to deal with what that sector of subsistence agriculture, agriculture as a household as a production unit. So we have a lot of missed opportunities, and we need to look into those missed opportunities, what they cost us, and how we then know not to repeat those mistakes. So agricultural census, we are discussing with the Department of Agriculture. I think we are going ahead. But let me say again that at times when these things happen, Eastern Cape wanted to go its own way on the agricultural census, and we had to say, no, this has to be countrywide, because, so I think we are moving in that kind of direction. The other thing that I think we need to really take care of is the citizen satisfaction survey. We ran this in KwaZulu-Natal wants the second citizen satisfaction survey. And if you look at the results of the citizen satisfaction survey, they show the problems of planning. That there's no clear planning here. People are not satisfied. If you are looking at human settlements, you expect that the levels of satisfaction in those things associated with human settlement will center around a single figure. But when you look at the dispersion from electricity to water to everything, it shows that the IDP is not working as a process for implementation. And that begs the question, strengthen planning in government. It needs to be strengthened. I mean, the evidence is so obvious that the Department of Monitoring, Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, particularly the planning leg of that department, really needs to be need serious attention, and we really are quite excited ourselves because I think that is being received. And there is Pruma, we will have that. Level of consumption of drugs and like, I think what we should say, I mean, I don't know where we rank. I mean, the league tables, you never know how they get compiled. We are not part of the compilation of the league tables, but I think it's a problem that is rising. It has always been a Mitchell's Plain problem, or parts of Northern Cape, and there we knew that we really have a serious problem. You see it in the nature comparatively in the country. But it is now an increasing problem across the country, and it has to be attended to. I think Mitchell's Plain has been suffering, going through this, enduring its own pain, but now the pain is being democratized across the country, and we have to rise to that funk, to that situation, and begin to address it. And I think emphasizes what suffered in Mitchell's Plain and other parts of the country have suffered. So it's a new problem, and I think the ingredients of it speeding up are all there. High levels of unemployment amongst the youth, their failure to progress through university, and all that are pure ingredients for this to actually fester and fuel. So it is very clear, and we can show it location-wise. Consumption of alcohol is about 3.5% of expenditure, but in the Free State, 8%, and I think that's where the point is worrisome. Why is it above that? Does TSSA invite other departments when publishing? We've been talking with the McDonough that we release our results, we can invite departments, but they'll have not read the report, so it's difficult to respond at that point. But we have agreed that subsequent to releasing the report, then we can actually sit and discuss the content. And then we work together as to when will they respond and so on. So we are working on that systematized process. And I think it will help quite a lot. What we are not going to do is to release the report to department before you release it. Because if it is unfavorable, there might be political interference. We have seen these things, they happen. We may be quite benevolent, but it's not about being benevolent, but justice must not only be done, must be seen to be done. And that must be seen to be done requires that you put all things that guard against any interference in that space. Because it can be interfered with. Human nature is very interesting. Now I'll leave the rest to my colleagues here. Chief, you want to start? You've got a questions on the consumptions of alcohol. Presenting to cabinet, yes, I think Chief, you could take that, and I've touched on it, but I think you can elaborate on it. Employment of women, you could also, Celia will deal with that. Performance, yes, why is it not at 100? Clean audits, And then, of course, that was the question of whether we invite others. I think that's... But once again, Madam Chair, yes, indeed, let me thank you for appreciating and that we got this award. This was the second time we get that, although we are runner-ups, but still, we are the top, the top part. We want to maintain that.
With regard to alcohol consumption in the Free State, what are the possibilities of a slight statistical miscalculation?
I'm sure Esti will respond later when you close up. Let's take the over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Jay.
No, he's going to respond. He's still just freshening up. It's too democratized, isn't it?
Thank you, Jay. I would just like to report on the performance evaluations, agreements and evaluations. I'm just looking at our numbers on our monthly report, which shows much better. We also have a monthly reporting system. But the main reason for not being 100% was due to the fact that that we were moving. People actually packed away their performance contracts and agreements, and then the move was delayed for a couple of months, and it was packed away. So we have informed the DPSA accordingly to indicate to them that the capturing of all this information will be delayed a bit. So we have informed them accordingly. So hopefully in our last report we'll be back on track. So we're just playing a bit of catch-up in terms of our performance evaluations. In terms of, and I want to speak specifically representation of women at SMS level, we have done a deeper statistical analysis on how our staff profile looks like, comparing specifically in terms of our vacancies, which now has been reduced in the budget cut. We have looked at our just below SMS, specifically our levels 7 to 11, which is our feeding progression, that our female representation is more than adequate to in future feed. So our capacity building efforts must specifically focus on that. So we have identified that if we have our normal growth, that numbers in future will definitely change. Of course, you know, it depends on how the attrition and, you know, how people either move out of the organization to allow upward progression. But definitely our figures below our SMS levels looks very positive for future female employment to move into that area. Thank you. So we have a strategy in terms of how we want to progress in future.
Say also you will provide us just a template, a spreadsheet that it breaks it down in terms of even race and all those things and ages, because you have provided to us previously just to an updated one. Okay. We'll really appreciate that one before the month end, if possible, which is in 2 weeks' time practically. We are going to market. Okay. Go ahead, Ndati. Over to you, sir.
Chair, the whole issue of transformation at Stethese in terms of the human capital has been at the center of the Stethese leadership debate for quite some time in terms of the racial profile of the organization for almost 20 years now. And because the profiles didn't look very good when we started into democracy, as would happen with any other department. And we have actually taken it not only in terms of just bringing the warm bodies, but actively training the warm bodies that in previous censuses, when we had to do the evaluations, for a census to be accepted internationally,
as well as for us to take those numbers to the minister and the president and say these are numbers you can work with. We have to have a statement by the Statistics Council, and the Statistics Council has to be advised by a team of international experts. In the past, we used to have international experts coming in to analyze our data. Today, when we do evaluation in the last census, Census 2011, as well as in the large-scale sample survey, which had about 1.5 million households, the analysis was done by StatsSA employees, mainly women, some of whom that we have trained internally to a level of PhD. So there has been a concerted effort in capacity building. But one of the things that we also do is we have said and decided that we cannot let things that have been difficult for us as a country encumber us from debating and discussing openly. So we have had one of the most difficult debates recently about whether we should celebrate the 100 years of the existence of statistics or the 20 years and what it would mean for the entire country and what it would mean for our employees. And we said, yes, we know our statistical function started in 1914, but for the fact that it was not representative of all the people of South Africa, we wouldn't celebrate the 100 years, would mark only the 20 years. That was about 2 years back. So we do talk openly and engage openly about these kinds of issues. Back to the issue of sharing information with or presenting at cabinet. Following every release of the census, we have always an large-scale sample survey, or even other surveys like the income and expenditure survey. We have always made efforts and arrangements with cabinet to go and present. Actually, the president has always insisted that we must come and address at the coordinating committee, as with the premiers. We also address at the cabinet committees as well as at cabinet. And of course, not only that, we have also gone to provincial premiers and presented to the executives. As regards the recently released community survey, we have engaged with our colleagues in DPME, but the income and expenditure survey is freshly released in the last 2 weeks, and we still have to make arrangements that cabinet is appropriately apprised. But as we do so, we cannot do so. In the past, we used to go as StatsSA alone. What is happening now is that the bringing of StatsSA into the planning function, where the Department of Monitoring and Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation and StatsSA sit side by side and both report to the same minister, has created an opportunity for us to continue to work together and buttress the issues so that when we go to present at cabinet, it's not only just the numbers, but taking a particular storyline, and such issues should continue to follow. I thank you. My colleague, Eshuel Jeneka, has a few things to say here.
Thank you. Thank you. Just to add on the ESG's statements on alcohol consumption, as the ESG has indicated and the World Health Organization's report actually confirms that the alcohol consumption in South Africa has increased. They do an annual update of 194 countries across the world. And on this report, I mean, we can't verify the report, but we are number 19 on the list of people that consume alcohol. And so they do the pure alcohol consumption per capita. In fact, Moldova and Belarus and Lithuania is the top alcohol consumers across the world. I met the head of Moldova Statistics a year and a half ago, and she didn't drink a drop. I might have concluded that they don't drink anything in Moldova. Interesting, South Africa is number three in Africa behind Namibia and Gabon. So it is a problem that's increasing, because in 2014 it was 11 liters per capita, and 2015 it was 11.5, and it's estimated that it will just grow up to 2025. So it is something that we need to look at and look at the detail of statistics to see whether one should have some sort of an intervention. Thanks.
Then we close the liquor one.
That's the alcohol consumption. What about the other vices? Vices like, you know, drugs. How does it compare?
Honorable Velma? Thank you, Chair. I took a photo because I didn't see that map in the book. So I can just read more information. Maybe it's in the breakdown, I'm not sure. But I just wanted to ask, this really bothers me. So I wanted to ask, these numbers, is it a reason for concern for Statistics South Africa? These two provinces that are the highest, are there maybe other reasons, like the number of people per province, or maybe the quality of life, maybe? What are the reasons behind these high numbers? It really bothers me. Is this a reason for concern? So just that's my question. Thank you, Chair. Asti, you want to take it up? Or?
Yes, we can try and answer. Concern? No. I think Nadema Tuna has to answer that one, whether it's consent. Is that consumption? High consumption levels. Because it's a subject of planning. And when you talk about concentration, part of the problem is shown in those two provinces because of concentration. How do we deal with our space economy? It's very, very important. And of course, there's urbanization. But how do we deal with other urban centers that probably have potential, and then we can even we can have some level of even development, because an even development is also detrimental. So I think that's what we need to do. So what we have done in order to really understand better is what we created at Stellenbosch University, which is the Center for Regional and Urban Innovation and Statistical Exploration, where we send the DDGs for a year. I mean, Risanga Maluleke here and went there in 2011. Ashwell Jeneka has just completed that one-year program. He's just come back. He's been having a year there. And all the DDGs have to go through that program so that we can understand and lead statistics, understanding why it is crucial to embed it in planning. This is a very deep going leadership program for us. And that's why we can actually, we've moved from just statistics at tables, but statistics across space as a concentration. So yes, we welcome the question, but yes, it's a concern in terms of concentration, it's a concern in terms of income distribution, is a concern because of inequality that is buried in those numbers. It is a concern in terms of, despite that concentration, the high cost of living associated with those provinces, particularly housing and transport in Gauteng.
Do you want to take it up?
Contrast, yes.
Okay. But also, it's a carryover question that he posed to DPSA last week, to say, you've got good plans, and you seem to be in the right direction, and also you are filler to serve the blockages, as it were, but why don't you just do what you're supposed to do? And 2 weeks back, I attended a meeting where the president was. He said we must learn in South Africa to do what we're supposed to do at the right time for the correct reasons. But having said that, the point that I'm driving at is the issue of that point, why he asked that question, is to say, as an oversight body, as parliamentarians, we must ensure that when the business plans speak, also respond positively in terms of, you call it structural change, structural engineering rather, so that also even the system talks to the PR reports that we are receiving and be mindful at all in back of our minds. So which means together with DPSA and this portfolio committee, we've got more work to do. It's either we prioritize certain departments, we can look at that one in the workshop, prioritize certain departments that we are going to focus on, even based on that South African map that you have given us. To say it is a worry, in the unevenness, inequalities and all those things, but also what needs to be done. And is there what needs to be done and why it's not being done? And what then do we assist DPME to be more assertive? Because the regulations will take some years, it won't happen in our lifetime, but also being assisted by us to be more positioned assertive, as it were, it will help them then to say they monitor, they evaluate, they monitor, and also they assess, evaluate and monitor, but also support, inverted commas, looking for a better word, mentoring as well, to say this is the area that we want to zoom in as a country, as DPME, this is the area that we want to. So hopefully come next year, we will be seeing something, a shift somewhere there, because we'll also be going to approving the budget and also our BRRRs and all that. But I think as we move along from that side of the table, we must also ensure that we hamper on that point so that there is change somewhere. But I'm sure, Honorable Dawa, I'm not speaking for you, but I was trying to also to see there is a link between us as DPME and CSSA and NYDA and also DPSA in terms of structural reform, as it were, so that it speaks to the points that we have been raising. Because DPME, they can only sensitize them. But if there's no close, glued working relationship within these two ministries, they will still be in a disjuncture, as it were. But I'm sure we'll take it up, those ones, also when we engage in our own other platforms that we're privileged to attend as well. The last one, then we'll close, and then thank you.
Madam Chair, yes, I shouldn't speak after you, but we really, really had been discussing this with Dade Maduna. We really need to attend to planning. We need to attend to planning, and DPME, the planning leg has to be strengthened. It's useful to monitor and evaluate, but if the coordination, and the coordination is not just assembling plans. It's actually putting these plans through the eye of the needle and saying, do these things work or not? And that's what the planning function should do. And as I said, the tools at least are there, and we need to start embedding those tools to ensure that that's my 5 cents contribution to the planning.
Okay, thank you so much for the good work. You didn't promise us anything so far, so we are fine. We are on track, and we are happy that you have also gave us a sense of comfort that you will also, by the end of the financial year in question, you'll meet all your objectives and you get 100%, as it were. Honorable Mr. DG, DPME, sir, it's over to you and your team, and you'll follow the queue in terms of presentation. If you like, also just to give us a sense of comfort also, because he was committing you in a number of areas that he just can't give us a confirmation thereof. And I'm sure he was telling us the truth, but we want also to hear from the horse's mouth, as it were. Thank you so much. But also just to ask first what we requested from NYDA, just give us a less than 5 minutes helicopter mandate for the benefit of the new members. I know they are aware, but just to make sure that all of us were in the same level. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and honorable members of the committee. I realize we're starting nearly 40 minutes later than we were supposed to, but 20 minutes is allocated to my presentation, so I'm going to walk through it very quickly. We did circulate a document, so I'm sure members of the committee have had time to at least have a quick scan of what the content of our presentation is going to be like.
We are on time, so please don't be economical in terms of information where you think you should give us, please.
So I said we start at 10 past 11.
No, according to my watch. Don't worry, I'm chairing, so I'm giving you that.
Yeah, no, but the program says 10 past 11 we start.
Okay. No,
and
my watch. No, I get the point. Let's move then.
Okay. Thank you. So, we have on this slide we introduce the work of the department, and in there we specify what the core role of the department is, which is to monitor the implementation of the National Development Plan. Members will be aware that we do this through what is called a medium-term strategic framework, which outlines for every electoral cycle the priorities that government will be pursuing. But we also have a mandate to look at planning, to enhance the quality of planning. And this is, I think, the theme of much of what the Statistician General has been talking about. To institutionalize evidence, what we call evidence-based planning. The Statistics Authority, SSA, will obviously be the foundation for this evidence. There will be the institutional backstop to the planning work, and they're already doing that. So we have started to engage with them. So the core data that we report will have either been drawn from CSSA in the majority of cases, or validated by CSSA based on what they know. And I think this is a journey, Chair. What the Statistician General is basically saying is that we have arrived at the point where we have learned from the work that he's been doing, and we have learned from the work that we have been doing. We must now move to build the appropriate institutional architecture for the planning function. It's not an easy thing, because planning does not only happen at the national level or at the central level. We don't have a centralized planning system like you had in Eastern Europe. Our system has different legs to it. There's planning at the center, and we, as a department, aspire to be that planning authority at the center. But there's also departmental planning in accordance with the constitutional votes of each ministry. There's planning at provincial level, there's planning at municipal level. So it's very complex. So there are elements of this institutionalizing planning that we're undertaking. We do, for example, we assess departmental plans, and we comment on the departmental plans in terms of whether they are aligning with our priorities as a government. We are starting to work with the provinces similarly. We have this function given to us from transferred to us from national treasury, because they had both the role of validating departmental plans and then allocating budgets. Now they've separated that role, which I think is a good thing, to separate the planning from the resource allocation. The Statistician General spoke about spatial planning, the Act, which is now being transferred to us. We think all of this should converge into an overarching framework on the policy and regulation of planning in government. I don't want to preempt this, whether it's going to require legislation or not. Obviously, we'll explore those things as we go forward. In terms of the work, the way we've organized our work, it's in terms into five programs. The first one being administration, and just in that regard, you know, to promote good governance in the way we run the department. And when last we were here, we reported about another year consistent unbroken record of clean audits that this department has been having. Chair, I need to emphasize this because we are aware of the burden of responsibility to lead by example that we have as a department, and I'm pleased that we continue that track record. And program two is where we do the monitoring, the main monitoring, and it's in terms of the 12 outcomes that the government has identified. I'll say a little bit more about that later on. Program three, we monitor management and leadership issues within departments. Program four is where it's the location of the work we're doing around planning, which involves also supporting the National Planning Commission, which is an independent body, as members will be aware. And program five is where we deal with youth development issues, as well as the oversight on the work of the NYDA. We have said the monitoring of the National Development Plan is in terms of the MTSF, and here, Chair, what I'm trying to do is to infuse into my report the monitoring, or at least giving a glimpse of the work being done in government. So this report is meant to be the report of the work of the department. It's not a report of the work of government as a whole. But we're trying to bring that because we monitor the work of government. We're trying to give members an insight into how we look at the work that has been done in government. It is through the MTSF, 12 outcomes. As you will know, the government cabinet decided that the current MTSF, which was formulated immediately after the NDP was adopted, will constitute the first five-year implementation plan for the NDP. So we are in, if you like, experimental terrain in terms of how we drive the NDP going forward, and that the important lessons that we are learning, as the Statistician General has indicated, that they are also learning about how we can improve in the next round. So the outcomes that government is pursuing through the MTSF are indicated there. They are all aligned with the NDP, the content of the NDP. And as you are aware, each of these has got specific targets, specific indicators for each outcome. And that's the work in monitoring that we trace on and report on a quarterly basis. We report to cabinet. But for simplicity, we have cast this work in terms of what we see as the levers. This makes it easy for us to identify where the resources are, the things that we must move to move the NDP forward. So we, on the one hand, what I would call the economic levers, all the economic interventions, and levers that have to do with the capabilities of South Africans, which really are education and social wage issues, as well as the institutional capacity of the state, as well as how the state works with the rest of society in moving. So this is an easier way of categorizing that the levers and the monitoring that we do is located within this framework. What we did, we are now at the midpoint of the medium-term strategic framework. So Cabinet had requested us at the last Lekgotla to just give a high-level overview of where we are. And so here are just highlights. In the area of higher education and training, we refer to the expansion in the number of university students. Now, the SG is correct that it's not just a question of the expansion of numbers access. So, you know, we are achieving near universal access at basic education level, and we are increasing access at tertiary level via NEFSA's funding that is being provided, and that's leading to increased numbers. You have to start there. The throughput, the quality are obviously other matters, and whether the output meets the requirements of the economy, that's the next level of planning. But at least in terms of setting up a system that ensures that sort of average South Africans, once you have a good metric, you have a reasonable chance of getting higher education. I think we are moving in the right direction. Human settlement, we indicate the number of houses, the additional units that the state has provided. I think CSSA, the overall number since 1994, we're sitting at between 3 and 4 million housing units that the state has provided, which is a critical part of dealing with poverty. And we know now that in terms of the drivers of poverty, these assets have assisted quite a great deal. Now poverty really is not driven by income. Income poverty, which deals with opportunities for gainful employment and participation in the economy, but poverty related to assets such as housing. We have made great strides. Equally, poverty associated with access to electricity, refuse removal, access to water, access to sanitation, all of those are critical and have moving us forward. And we indicate some of the numbers. You know, these are obviously numbers for the period 2014, the current MTSF period. If you take from 1994, all of these numbers are obviously much higher than this. And of course, in terms of social protection, about 16.8 million South Africans.
Sorry, Doctor. Just for members' benefit, we have also now amplified your presentation, so there are slides that we don't have. So if you can indicate which one are those ones, so that also we can...
No, we have circulated. Haven't we circulated?
No.
We have circulated later.
The latest.
Yes, we have circulated. We don't have it. I don't know what happened.
No, it doesn't matter. Let's leave that one. Probably as you speak, because you know what are the changes. Because even myself, I don't have it. I've been up for the yesterday's one. It will answer. Honorable Grandma, I'm going to do that to interject you.
Thank you, Chair. Very difficult for me to follow if I do not have the presentation. I have repeatedly asked and requested that it happens on Friday before the meeting. I cannot prepare, I cannot note my questions down, and I cannot follow. I ask again, especially the weekend before the meeting happens, I need to read. I read this last night, and nothing on this slide is the same as the one I have.
So what Honorable Velma and other honorable members that join us slightly late, I did raise that one as a point that there has been some slack in terms of that one, and it was too late for us even to decide whether we cancel the meeting or not. But having said that, I did stress a point. All, including SSA, DPME, and NYDA was here. And I stressed that point that we're doing for the last time now because it leaves our line difficult. It's even worse for you, Honorable Velma, because also it has to get into much right notes. And I'm saying, DG, if we can just assist us to say in terms of the one that was sent yesterday, and then say this is the slide you don't have it, and all those things, so we can look at the on the screen for progress sake. Is that fine, honorable members? Yeah, we don't, because they've already engaged. It's just that for you then, just to be mindful that we don't have some of the information that you're talking to. But we appreciate also the details of their offer.
I apologize, Chair, we sent a draft, then we updated it and circulated it this morning. So I approved it yesterday for circulation, and I'm told that it has some members. It was circulated. Maybe there are not enough copies, and I'd like to apologize, Chair. We did take note of your request for early circulation of documents. We will make sure that we stick to that. I tried to stick to that for this round, but I think there were some administrative glitches.
Can we just quickly, Ms. Polly, can we ensure that you circulate the program that you adopted in our last meeting for members, but also recirculate it to all the departments and their entities and the Stats SA and Public Service Commission and everybody, and also with an attachment letter that indicates to them that if you are expected in terms of the program to come before the committee in 2 weeks' time, we are saying that 2 weeks backwards, we must have received the presentation, and then changes can happen in between that. It will help because it will assist members. Honestly, we really, really beg. We also inform DPSA as well, because it has to be a matter of principle. Because the program, we agreed that we're not going to change it. The only thing that we're going to do is to add on the program, not to change it. But also, even when we add, we'll be mindful that we must give the departments ample time also to prepare, as it were. But for now, I will urge members that we proceed, and also you also just indicate to us the added information, as it were. Thanks, sir. Over to you once more.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. So we also monitor what government is doing in the area of corruption. That slide speaks for itself. It speaks to some of the institutional arrangements, the legal issues around the framework for fighting corruption. And here we as members will know, the NDP really has three overarching goals. First being to eradicate poverty, reduce unemployment, the second one, and significantly reduce inequality. And in this slide, we give a latest update as to where we are in each of those. Clearly, we are still a long way from making a dent on eradication of poverty, absolute poverty. Unemployment is a very elusive challenge, very intricate challenge for our country, now sitting at 27.1%. And again, you know, all of this are the data supported by Stats SA. Just to conclude, in the remainder of the MTSF period to 2019, we must really step up in terms of implementing all the things that we have committed to achieve the NDP. We need to prioritize. We need to target priorities, and I think the work of STSA helps us to see where our investments as a state are having the desired effect, where we need to enhance, and where we need to tweak what we do, because we're not necessarily making progress, and how to allocate resources, particularly in a constrained economic and fiscal and environment. Now we come to the specific APP highlights. This is now in terms of the departmental plan. We're moving from talking about the work of government to talking about the work of the department. I've mentioned this work around assessing departmental plans against the allocation of resources and alignment with the National Development Plan, so that specific undertakings that we have made in our annual performance plan, and this indicates that, you know, this is all pretty much work in progress. here is something which we have taken up over the last 2 years, looking at unblocking payments of suppliers within 30 days as required by the PFMA. Cabinet asked our department to assist with monitoring and unblocking this, and we are very pleased with the progress we're making. It has become a very important activity, and there we indicate the numbers of invoices that we have unblocked as of the 3rd of February, sitting at 273, and the tables below indicate the status of invoices at both national and provincial departments that are paid after 30 days and that are older than 30 days and remain to be paid. As you can see, these are massive numbers which are critical. If the state really wants to be an enabler of small enterprise development, we need to really check up how I act in this area. So we're very pleased with the progress we're making here. Operation Pakisa is another coordinating role that we play. It's a combination of both planning and implementation. Typically, you have stakeholders that are critical for a particular outcome. And there we see that we've targeted the ocean economy, which is where this methodology of bringing together critical stakeholders to unblock areas where value can be derived in moving forward and to achieve specific outcomes, and they contract, and we then monitor the implementation thereof. So Operation Pakisa started in the oceans economy, which has been identified for massive opportunities where we can grow our economy. And since 2014, 7 billion rand of investments has been unblocked in that area, 6,000 jobs created. And obviously, as we continue to implement the initiatives that have been agreed, we will increase those numbers. Health sector, what is called the Ideal Clinic, was the second one. There is a number of the numbers that indicate performance in that area. The third one was in basic education, which was launched in October, and again we have numbers of what was achieved. In December 2015, we concluded the Operation Pakisa in the mining sector. And this is some initiatives that have already been started, have already been implemented in that area. We'll continue to monitor that. And the latest one is the Operation Pakisa on agriculture, land reform, and rural development that was completed at the end of 2016. Here we also coordinate responding to distressed mining communities, and here there are a number of initiatives, number of work streams. Our minister convenes an inter-ministerial committee, several departments, as well as the private sector. And again, it's another form of a Pakisa. There are several initiatives, work streams that are undertaking work to deal with this challenge of distressed mining communities, and these slides report on some of the activities and the programs that are being implemented, as well as some of the challenges that we are encountering in this area. A very important program of the department that's been growing is frontline service delivery monitoring. We have up to so far visited 97 new facilities. In 39 facilities, we have improvement plans, because when we visit a facility, we write a report on what we see that is not working well. We give the recommendations for what needs to be done to the management, and we have a follow-up visit. And in most cases, we do see that you know that those improvements are being implemented. So it's a maturing new tool of monitoring that we are implementing along with what we call citizen-based monitoring, which is also growing slowly. We have prepared a report, a comprehensive report of this activity under four themes. What we see about buildings, whether it's hospitals, police stations, or driving lessons centers, equipment that's been used, the staff, and coordination between the frontline service delivery area, as well as the relevant departments, because often service delivery is affected by poor coordination. And these findings emphasize the need for proper management and resourcing, because sometimes we take policy decisions and we don't see that on the ground where they're supposed to be delivered, you know, whether the proper plans and organization is in place to make sure that we achieve our policy objectives. We undertake evaluations. Kati spoke about how we are assisting in evaluations, because it's important that programs of government, particularly those that attract massive amounts, are evaluated on an ongoing basis. And when they are not working well, we can fix them, or if they're not working well, that's going to have an impact, we discontinue them. So those are the data around the evaluations that we have undertaken. I think they cover around 90 billion rand of government expenditure, which is quite significant. We're starting to work with provinces as well, because the discipline of evaluation is still have a long way of getting embedded in government, and it's about really the use of evidence in improving implementation and delivery. Then there is MPAT and LGMIN, which is what we look at in municipalities, capacity of municipality to deliver, as well as management capacity at national government departments. We make observations, and what we are finding is that those departments that perform well in terms of management assessment tend to be much more effective in delivery. And those that score low, you see that also in terms of their impact and ability to deliver is affected. This committee has advised us to start to think about interventions to help capacity building in those areas, departments where there are challenges, and we are working on that. Youth, this speaks to the Presidential Working Group on Youth, which is how we ensure that youth development is a responsibility not just of the NYDA, but of all of government. Our intention is that we should be able to track what every rand of government expenditure contributes to youth development as a designated group. If we're able to get to that level, I think that we will have enhanced our ability to monitor the contribution of government to youth development, and enabling NYTA to be supported in a network, if you like, a delivery network between NYDA, government departments, and other entities in government. We've done a strategy review. We have to constantly review what we do to enhance our effectiveness. This is a very young department, 2 years old, since 2014. We've brought under one roof the previously separate initial work under planning that delivered the National Development Plan through the National Planning Commission, and then the previous performance monitoring have now been brought under one roof. So we have to constantly be looking. And so we've done the strategy review to look at how we improve and how we create synergies, enhance synergies, and make sure the department works in a kind of seamless way, you know, because planning, monitoring, and evaluation is part of the same process, and we have to enhance those synergies. We want to move to a point where we've started monitoring almost everything. As you saw, there are 14 outcomes. We monitor everything. We now want to move to where we can monitor areas of high impact, high value. And that's what our intention going forward through this strategic review. We have additional resources from National Treasury, so we can bring in a bit more capacity, particularly in those areas of priority. We have a new organogram, which DPSA are looking at, and we are awaiting their approval so that we can start recruiting into that space. Having said that, this is not going to be, because we're not an implementing structure of government. We're monitoring and planning, so we're not going to be a massively big department. But our capacity, clearly in critical areas, some of which Statistician General has referred to, planning, will have to grow. And we succeeded in getting Treasury to allocate more money to us. Here is, in quantitative terms, the number of targets in terms of our APP, those we have achieved, those we have exceeded, and those that we have partially achieved. I won't spend time, the numbers speaks for themselves. Typically, where we haven't achieved is in relation to the resourcing, recruiting, because we don't have the structure has not yet been approved. There's a slight delay, and that's delaying our ability to fill those positions. So that's some of the areas that we haven't achieved in. This slide just kind of gives a concluding observations about our performance. To say that there are no major changes, I think we are on course to achieve our targets for the remainder of the financial year, which ends at the end of next month. We will also achieve our spending plans, spending targets. I've spoken to where we haven't achieved any other issues there. I'm going to then hand over to our CFO to quickly take us through our financial performance, and then I'll come back and conclude the presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, DG Chair, honourable members. The first slide we have under financial performance is basically the same as the slide on page 3. It just gives an indication on the budget that's allocated to each of the programs. The next slide. The next slide is just a reminder that while our budget looks big, we give quite a large portion of that to our good friends across the table there, the NYDA. This is how the budget is allocated currently in the department. On slide 27, our expenditure versus our original projections. As you can see, we are on track to spend the money allocated to us. We spent more or less as we projected in all three quarters to date. There will be one exception, which I'll get to in the next slide. We were allocated, as the DG pointed out, funding to increase capacity, especially in the priority areas that he identified. However, due to delays in finalizing the organizational structure, we declared 30 million rand in savings on compensation of employees in the adjustments budget. And the current expectation is that a further 15 million rand on compensation of employees will not be spent, but we are, however, confident that we will be spending all our goods and services and capital budget. We cannot use the savings on compensation for anything else. The Treasury has classified that as specifically and exclusively appropriated, and as I say in the last bullet there, we expect to spend 97% of our budget in the current financial year. DG, are you doing the conclusion?
Yeah, just in conclusion, Chair, So we have developed a number of tools and methodologies. As I've indicated, they're well established. We are going to be shifting the focus, as I've indicated, to priority areas of high impact, and this will inform the capacity that we are going to build and how we allocated the money that we have. And I think that concludes our presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, DG, and your team. Honorable members, we'll start by Honorable Dobbs going this way.
Thanks a lot, Chair. Chairperson, I would appreciate
A bit detailed information on if you say there has been an improvement on the ocean economy and other stuff. You know, it would make more sense if that is put in a comparative way, that maybe in the previous year this is where we were, now this is the improvement that has occurred, so that one gets a better understanding of the improvement that we are talking about, and we are able to articulate that to the public out there. Of course, remember that the information that we share is the information that we do it on behalf of our communities. And as politicians, it always helps us to have good statistics in terms of either the improvements or whatever problems that occur in departments.
Chairperson, I just want to find out the manner of planning, the provincial plans are constituted by, the provincial plans are constituted by departments in that particular province. Is that how it is? Or do they seem to be different? And if they're different, what is the difference? Yeah, I think that would be all from me, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Velma.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to DPMB for the presentation. If I can please just appeal to if I can get the revised presentation as up there, email to me, please. Thank you very much. Some questions. The health component of PAKISA, it was spoke about the ideal clinics. Can you maybe just quickly elaborate on what you see as ideal clinics? If we're saying that there is an improvement or was, what was that improvement? If you could explain that to us, please. Secondly, through you, Chair, the NYP, I've just downloaded it now, so I will read through it. I was just wondering, the deputy ministers that are involved with PAKISA and the drive to implement that, from which departments are those deputy ministers? Then thirdly, I spoke about the second and third quarter targets. It was said that some targets were not met because the structure was not approved. If you can just give me an idea, the strategic plan wasn't approved, or what is that structure that wasn't approved that gave rise to the delay in achieving the targets? Thank you, Chair. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Velma.
Thank you, Chair. The request has been made, so I can just endorse it. That we would need the updated. But I want to refer to it. If they could go, please, to the reference to human settlements in this section of it. Yes, there was something that was said about human settlement. Right. Yes. 200,000 households in informal settlements have been upgraded. What does that mean? Were these mikukus which were built up, or were these? What happened? What is that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Jefferson, my question is around the NDP goals, some of which are ambitious goals, considering the developments that have happened in terms of the revised economic growth year on year for the country. Now, before I was in this committee, for example, I was previously in the Higher Education Portfolio Committee, which is not going to meet its targets in terms of the NDP. I'm sure that's not the only department that finds itself in that situation. And it's got to do with not just with the resources for its operations, but it's also got to do with the manner in which infrastructure hasn't met or been able to facilitate the utilization of certain resources. So my first question is, what exactly is the role of this department? What intervention does it take? What does it do in that situation where you have certain targets that become apparent? Those targets are not going to be met, no matter what. I mean, surely the first step is to see how can we assist that department to align and to reach those targets. But when it becomes apparent that it is completely unfeasible with all of the different constraints taken into account, what then happens in that situation? And the second question that I have is that maybe it's perhaps my view and what has become apparent to me, but there are certain departments where perhaps because of the ideological differences of the ministers involved and their approach to the NDP, that there may be, and I'm not saying this is the case, but there may be that the goals and the outcomes of the NDP are not taken as seriously in those departments. I wanted to get the view of the acting DG, whether or not there are any departments that are not moving as quickly or as decisively, I think that's what's important, as decisively in leadership towards the goals and the targets of the NDP, and what departments that may be, those may be.
Thank you. Honorable Young Floyd, Honorable
Sarimbat. Chair, obviously I echo the correct documentation to ask better questions. But first of all, I'm curious to know on the 30-day by law to pay on invoices, what exactly is the intervention that this department is taking? You know, are you working with Treasury or how does it happen? And then I was quite keen to see on your data war center, on the old document, that you, I don't know how, selected 27 municipalities with COPTA. Just explain to us which, or give us a written report in due course, but how are these selected? I'm sorry if it's a duplication of previous info, but I'd like to know. And then earlier on Stats IFA, it was mentioned, and if I'm correct, it is DPME that yesterday released a report on education, if I understood it correct. That essay. Where can we get it? That is it on a website somewhere already? Thank you.
Thank you so much for those questions, Honourable Members. From my side, DG, as Pluma has been handed over or transferred to your department, did the functions follow the budget principle? Did it apply it? And what does that mean if no the budget didn't follow the functions? And what happened to the warm bodies that were executing that task at a rural development department as it were? Because your response then it will talk to the budget and the organogram as it were in terms of PPSA now being housed there. But linked to that is an issue of the impact of non-approval of the organogram by DPSA. Because mind you, when we're arguing for the budget from Treasury, the other issue was to filling off vacancies to make sure that you fulfill your mandate as it were. And now we're close to the end of the financial year. Definitely rest assured, Treasury will take that money. And And how do you then go to manage those contradictions? Because we need to be proactive. The question is that, have you been? In what form? The other question for me is that in terms of the other one, that is only that unfortunately I walked out, but also I just had a question about the improved, from Honorable Dobela, the improved ocean economy, that there must be a baseline. But also there are other, I hope you have covered this one, but I'll raise it, that there are so many Operation Pakistan without responding today, but I would like you to give us then how many Pakistan, and even in terms of their lifespan, and also handing over to the responsible department, and also sustainability thereof. Because from where I'm sitting, which I'm sure I am wrong, is that they become more of a public relations exercise. After that, nobody takes care of them, because they're supposed also to have a life that is continuous than a life that is just ends. The other question that I would like also to, for you, not the question, a request for information. 2 years back, we had, or early last year, no, it's 2 years back, late 2015, we were we engaged on oversight tour to help on distress mining. There are other elements of distress mining, which is housing issue, which more or less were at Sevilla, speaking for myself on that one, but also there are other issues that relate to that in terms of job security and employment and other social, economical issues there, which were relating around that. Also the relationship on the part in terms of investment in infrastructure, instead of having a standalone houses without an infrastructure. The last question from my side is the, you spoke about the houses that Honorable Dawood, the point that he picked it up, but also one would get, would like to get information that will tell us how many are unoccupied houses, because also mind you, also the other thing that as this committee also must be worried about, what mitigating factors, which if we, there are areas where there is a public service protest, and what are we intending to do that, to do with that? It's one of the issues that it worries us, and as an oversight body, but also in terms of your planning and everything, advising other government departments to respond to that. If we can get that information, we'd be very much happy, because we wouldn't like to be seen as if even ourselves were event orientated. Even the specific one in terms of the 30 days payment, in rather sense, how much is outstanding, because also how much has been paid to the service provider after our after your intervention, actually, so that we know, because there can be more those who have been paid, but in rent value, it could be like close to nothing as opposed to what is still outstanding. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. So I'll deal with the questions as best I can. I think on some of them, Chair, if you allow, we may want to make proper submissions of detailed information. I'll just give a sense of what I understand to be the status on those matters. On the oceans economy, so the figures that we've indicated is what the initiative has unlocked into that sector as additional investment that did not exist before and would not have materialized if the PAKISA had not been launched. And they have to do to a very large extent with investments in port infrastructure and the role of Transnet in that regard. That is where the figures and the report and the jobs that I have referred to have to deal with. But remember the PAKISA has got different components in it. So part of it has to deal with port infrastructure, part of it has to deal with aquaculture, and then of course linked to that is something which is new, which is by the way a separate process around small harbors. So there are different components of these that are all unfolding. The essence of PAKISA is the coordination. Obviously, in each area there will be targets around jobs and investment, but the most important thing is the coordination, because I think that speaking as now the head of this department, but a senior public official for the last 22 years, I believe that where our greatest undoing is in coordination, is in implementation. To a very large extent, we have good policies that are, in most cases, well-researched, evidence-based, but it's in our execution. Our execution is sometimes our greatest undoing, coordination. That is why the president, when he went to Malaysia and learned how the Malaysians do it, decided that we must follow that model. Our government must work like that. So we're piloting it in a number of areas, but ultimately our government must be a PAKISA government, all of it. We need to work in a systematic way. So the methodology does not leave anything to chance. It details out each and every activity by each and every one of this, because there's no running away, and we contract on that. So in most cases, it's still implementation. All of these things are independent. As and when we have outcomes, results, we will report on them. But the main activity right now is the coordination that is going on. Even, for example, in a sector like health, and I'll talk about the ideal clinic, because that's also a PAKISA thing, and I'll come back to the question around provincial planning. The ideal clinic. So, the ideal clinic is a clinic that is operated in accordance with a set of standards, predetermined standards that are international in terms of the World Health Organization. You know, what must a clinic have? So starting with the way patients are received at the front line, the staff component, the critical skills that must be had, the procedures, and so on and so forth. So all of those are set. So our clinics are then compared in terms of whether ideal, and some of them will rank higher because they have some of those standards in place. Others will be low. And the idea is those that are low, to work with them to bring them up to that highest standard. So when we do the frontline monitoring, for example, we walk into a clinic and we see, first of all, how patients are treated upon in the reception. And usually, in most cases, it's a very sorry sight to see how some of these facilities treat our people. Long queues. We ask an average patient, how long have you been here? Now, the ideal clinic might say, a patient needs to be attended to within at least 60 minutes, an hour, 90 minutes having arrived. Sometimes you have people who have been waiting for hours, 3 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours.
Sorry,
before.
I'm begging to listen to your response. I hope I'm the only one. What we are requesting is that we know, by the way, we started in this committee in 2014.
Yeah.
So which means at least, and most of us were not new in Parliament, all of us, we arrived in 2014, which means we do have a clue what is happening in terms of the intention of PAKISA, because that's a Sotho name. But what do we want to hear, because we are dealing with a review of Kata 1 and 2, 2 and 3, rather, is the specific that we visited Katlehong Clinic last year, and this time, rest assured, members, there has been improvement on this ticking the box. Be specific so that we can measure the performance and the progress of your intervention that you're doing. So to be generic, as broad as possible, it doesn't assist us, because which means you might also go to school and study monitoring and evaluation, what are the tools that you apply. But I'll urge you, if you don't have those specific, then I'll rather safe to say you will provide those specifications, because they're not on top of your head, because mind you, we still, some of us, we do have that information. Then if it's not accurate also, you might find yourself wanting. But I suggest that it would be better to be specific in everything that you are responding to us with, because we want to measure. Mind you, when you're giving us the report there, you use a percentage without saying that in terms of 34 objective.
Which one are you talking to?
No, I'm just general, because you are now taking us through the Operation PAKISA's...
Yes, because the question was, I must explain what an ideal clinic is. And that's what
But I'm saying the ideal clinic respect...
Was a question about what the ideal clinic...
Can you just lean about it will have. It will say, a clinic at Katlehong, it's supposed to be fenced. The fence must be 300 meters high, for argument's sake. But last year when you went there, it was not like that. The security guard, when you enter, the reception, when you enter to the gate, the gentleman or the lady by the gate, he was supposed to check my vehicle, and all those are the standards that you are able to say exactly what are the ticking box. The international one, as opposed to ours, where are we then can meet that one? Because even the international one, you must tell us that these are the criteria, this is what is expected. In terms of when you walk in, are you expecting someone to answer when you phone, expecting a person to take 5 minutes to pick up the phone? So I'm saying those exams to be more specific so that she can be schooled to know that when she goes to her clinic here in Western Cape, SMK for an example, what standard she must expect, because she doesn't know. That's why she was asking the question. But she can confirm what my understanding of her question was. Honorable Venma?
And I thought that's what I'm doing, Chair, but it doesn't matter. We will prepare a much more detailed set of information which I couldn't cover in this presentation on each of these matters. But that's exactly what I thought I was doing. Planning provincial plans are standalone plans. They are initiated by provincial government. Sometimes they will pick up on what is in the national plan, and we're working quite a lot with provincial departments to help them align their provincial plans with the national plans and with the national development plan. But to all intents and purposes, the provincial sphere is an independent sphere in terms of planning. But I have to say that there is a great desire by the provinces to ensure that what they do is aligned with the national development plan, and I think we assist in that regard. That's part of the process of institutionalizing planning. Related to that is planning cycles, to ensure that our planning cycles are aligned. We more or less plan in a coordinated manner. You know that the planning calendar at local level and at national level sometimes are misaligned. But in terms of the law, provinces are required to generate their own plans, and they have to comply with that in terms of process. We did indicate that because we, in terms of the impact of delayed approval of the structure, what the impact is on our targets, there are two specific areas which I highlighted, and my colleagues might want to add. The one is the filling of posts, which I've spoken to. The other is the annual performance plan. We have kind of asked to submit our APP slightly later, so that we can make sure that it reflects what the new strategy and the new structure seeks to take forward. But by and large, in most cases, I think we are on course to meet our targets, and I'm hoping that in the remainder of the year we can catch up. We are aware of the risk of loss of the resources that were availed for this year, but that has got no bearing to future years, the allocations of our resources, additional resources in the future years. The targets around the report on informal settlement is precisely those. You know, we know what informal settlements look like. They typically have no infrastructure, and the government has taken the decision that in certain circumstances, it's best to develop the settlement by providing it with the necessary infrastructure, as opposed to removing these things, unless there's a case to be made to remove this the people, the settlement, if it is not in the interest of the settlers in that area. But otherwise, the policy of government is to upgrade the settlement, and there is a target in our MTSF that has been set for this purpose, led by the Department of Human Settlement, and the numbers, there was an update in the period from 2014 up to now. So it's about electricity infrastructure, water infrastructure, roads, and those sorts of things. I think the question about the NDP is a very important question, because when the NDP was concluded, our outlook, we had a very optimistic outlook about the performance of the economy. We were coming from a recent period of high growth, and we thought we can repeat this period of high growth, high employment, high investment. But we know that for a combination of domestic and external factors, those conditions have never obtained. So the question is, what do you do? Do you adjust? Do you stick with your plans? And that's the kind of policy question that we confront right now, for which the answer is not clear. What we are doing, because we are at the midpoint of the medium-term strategic framework period, we are conducting a review. So currently there's a process of consultations with department. And again, SFSA will help us, because they're already seeing the areas where we may not make our targets, whether it's higher education or basic education, or perhaps even in terms of the economy. Some of the things that we are proposing to do around the economy, Status A already can see, you know, what the likely impact of those is going to be in terms of helping us reach our targets. So this might lead to a revision of the NDP. I'm not sure. It's hard to preempt that. But the question is an important one. And we are aware that the environment is not a friendly environment for our NDP targets. Having said that, I think the point about enhancing our implementation, enhancing accountability, all of those observations I've made remain relevant because we must satisfy ourselves that we have done our best to achieve the things that we have undertaken. The 30-day payment, the figures are there, Chair, you did ask this question as well, which indicates with the money that we've unlocked and the outstanding invoices that are older than 30, or paid after 30 days and those that remain unpaid, they are in the slide that I have shown. I'm trying to get the slide again now, but at any rate, what typically happens, some of these queries we get through the presidential hotline, some of them are referred to us by other departments. National Treasury, for example, they become aware. Or to the extent that service providers, and they are increasingly becoming aware because we're creating awareness and communicating that there is this service we are providing, people approach us with their queries. And then what we do, we convene the department concerned and the service provider concerned. We sit them together. We let them thresh through the issues. We identify the reasons why there's no payment. And often it's just a question of administrative systems about how you capture invoices and how you track them and make sure that you manage them properly. It's a financial management issue at the best of times. We have a system that ensures that we pay within 11 days. We pay within 11 days a legitimate invoice. Status A, they have also a very good system which we are trying to let people learn from. So to the extent that it's legitimate reasons like that, we are dealing with them. But sometimes, you know, the reasons might be a contractual reason where the service, the recipient of the service and the service provider, you know, are misaligned about what was expected. Some of these you'll find they're already in the courts, and when they're in the courts or there's litigation, you know, there's nothing we can do and that type of thing. So it's a complex issue, you know, but we are working on it, and I can provide more detail of what we are finding there. Spluma transfer, Chair, you spoke about that. And your question is spot on because I'm having a meeting with the DG of Rural to deal precisely with this because the ministers have agreed on the function transfer. A proclamation to transfer the function has been prepared. The administrative issues that follow around that, around funds and resources, those are not yet resolved. It took us a long time to understand which part of the Act we want to transfer to the department. It's really about a framework, you know, a national spatial development framework and the norms and standards. We're not taking entirely the whole Act. And how you then determine the resources that must accompany that is a bit of a challenge, but we're working on it. Chair, you're right about sustainability of these Pakisas. They are testing us because the Malaysian environment politically and institutionally is different. This has become second nature to them. For us, this is a learning curve. So we can report, provide in written form a comprehensive report on the state of each Pakisas, but we are monitoring them. As I said, they're all underway. That's all I can say. I think that the participants of these Pakisas are serious people. The officials, they're very committed. That's one of the things that struck me about their willingness to work together. and we can count on that, you know. So we'll continue to assist, facilitate, provide leadership, engage, because remember, the ministers as well are committed as well in terms of the outcome to provide. So the coordination of this also takes place at the highest level, which is ministerial. So we can give you a better assessment in detail, Chair, than I'm able to do so now. There was a question about, is there a department that's not performing for ideological reasons? I can't say so. I think in most cases it's capacity issues, it's poor planning, and other sort of organizational issues. I can't think of any instance where there's non-delivery or non-performance for political or ideological reasons. I think that concludes the questions. I don't know if there's anything that my colleagues want to add today. Thank you.
Okay, no, thanks very much, DG, and your team. You know, slide 8, DG, you know, some of us who are coming from provinces would like, not today, to say national department, which are those departments? If you recall, also, we did as a committee, the DIMDAO, had a public hearing around the 30 days payment. And there were specific departments which we agreed when we started in 2014 that there are those departments that in areas of the executing their mandate, they are serial offenders, we call them like that. So that has then, in future, if you can circulate it within the agreed 2 week period, if we say nationally, which are those departments which are worse than the other ones, even provincially as well, if we can get that, probably in provinces, can just give us the provinces, because going down to the departments, because the DG is supposed to also, provincial DG should be also be accountable for those issues, because it's a government policy, so we would be much interested on that aspect. Having said that, honorable members, I believe, before that, because I just want to sum up so that we can then deal with the second part of our agenda. Honorable Verma?
Sorry, Chair. You just missed one question, the NYP. Deputy Ministers, from which departments are involved in that, please?
Before you respond, any other hand, so that we can just close from our side in terms of questions. Silence is golden. DJ, do you like to just to take the Honourable Velma's question? Or CF? Yeah, I think it's for you.
What was the question? Sorry, I missed it.
The NYP.
Oh. The department. I think the Dr. Akala, she actually attends to that. She supports that department, that work, so she can better give the core of deputy ministers that are part of that.
Let's hear the female voice for a change. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The departments that are involved in overseeing implementation of the National Youth Policy are line functions departments, all line function departments that are directly involved in rendering youth development services. And those include departments such as Department of Higher Education and Training, Department of Health, Department of Economic Development, all line function departments. Departments that are not involved are those that are not directly involved in rendering youth development services, such as the National Treasury, SSA, Department of International Relations. We can finish the Honorable Committee with a list of departments. Economic and social cluster, mainly.
But that excludes treasury and finance, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. No, thanks so much. With that, that brings us to the end of our CPME and family, SSA, second and third quarter assessment, as it were. From my side, on behalf of the committee, I hope they are going to share this one with me then. I think the NYDA has mastered how to engage with the parliamentarians in terms of our expectations. And I think that it's coming very slowly but fast, I'm sure, with that IT energy of paperless and all that it will have. But also with the change of the DG from DPME, I think there is something that one needs to talk to. That, please, general, I'm general. When we ask their questions, it's because there are people that will represent them, or will pick up in the media, or one of the political parties in our, in particular in NA, would have raised a motion without notice or whatever, and would like to follow up those things. Because generally the motions without notice and member statements are supposed to be, after they have been read in the House, they go through the Speaker's office and directed to the department, the department is supposed to be responding to that. But also we don't have a clear system to track down those ones in terms of different portfolios or standing committee issues that have been raised, so that as members also can make a follow-up on those things, whether are they being taken seriously or not. So I would urge that in our engagement, there should be no feeling of being patronized when we respond, but also be patient with us when we ask questions. It will help. But also don't be tempted to downplay our recommendations when we put them before the department. I'm saying that, I was just saying to myself, if Honorable Nyamigoi was here, the mood of this meeting would have changed long time ago. And I'm saying that it will help, but also to work as a team. We're so like gentlemen and ladies, the way we operate, but not all of us. Because I hate a day where the department will drag their feet coming to the portfolio committee just because of interpersonal mastering skills. It will help. But also when from the chair I request that we follow a certain sequence, I would love that sequence to be respected. If there are any pre-arrangement in terms of what were prior circulated and there are changes in the meeting, kindly don't show it from your tone or your gesture on all that, because it equals to, in summary, disrespect. And some of us, we don't necessarily take it kindly. It's just that we take time to react to that. It will help. We're all for the same cause. We're all representing others. They talk, others they make this government tick, which is the administration, but there must be synergies. Because even when we are the ones who approve the money, you can imagine if we can have an attitude to DPME. It's not going to be you. It's going to be the portfolio committee that's going to be an attitude with Honorable Minister Jeff Hardem. It ends off the door. It becomes a political issue, which I don't think when we do our oversight at the committee level, we don't want to, we do want to reach to enter that space of politicking the work we do with the portfolio committee. We only politic in the House. We do our level best of this committee. The history has also said that, demonstrated that, regardless of the changing of the members from different political parties in this political committee, but we've made sure that we do our robust engagement and oversight, but would like a sense of respect a little bit. You can be diplomatic, but we can read between the spaces that it doesn't equal well from where I'm sitting. But with that, thank you so much. Then, Honourable Member? No, it can't be the meeting is adjourned. We have to look at the minutes. It can't be the meeting is adjourned. Honourable Members, I'm making an appeal on that. We agreed that as a matter of principle, the act, while the acting chair is chairing as an actor, we will continuously work towards adopting the minutes so that we don't have a backlog as we have in, from 2015. 2015 is on its own space, but moving forward, there are minutes which are before us and we do parade, and I'm happy that we've got the Honorable Velma, Honorable Dombeda, and Honorable Mzau, and myself. I would suggest that we look at those ones. They are very short minutes. I've gone through them. They've been circulated. If you don't have them, then that's another issue. Then let's do that quickly, Honourable Member. Honourable Member, you did receive the minutes. And also, I'm going to just give it to all of us, including myself. November. It was a briefing from DPSA and the public service draft bill, amendment bill that we're dealing with. A table of those who were present and apologies, the housekeeping matters, let me say that. Page 3, honourable members who were present in the meeting. I will quickly, honourable Dawi, if you may allow me, and honourable members, that page 3.1 must go. Opening and welcome is fine. You can say like that introduction because it's a sub of that. You take out that number 2, but that acting chairperson declares you take it out because there's a reputation there. But when you go to also to introduction, you still have got the same spirit. You know that first line, the acting chair. That's what. Just take it out. Yeah. Opening and welcome. It's fine. Acting chair. Take it out. Introduction thing. There's no need because when you start this paragraph here, it says the acting chair person. You take out the name. Because the acting chair that is surfaced well, because in terms of the attendance rate, it does indicate that the former is an acting chair. So because we are now forgetting a new standard, which we might not be very consistent in it. From my side, honourable members, also my side, just same on page 2, going to number 2, under deliberation, that the committee welcomed the department, it ends there in housing scheme, that the committee raised concerns. That the committee raised concern must be below that, because those are the concerns. It cannot be also the scope of the presentation as it were later. That's one. These are the concerns. From 2.1, then going below, those are the concerns. If you read it, it goes down. And then I'll wait for members to come to page 3. Honourable member.
But this on page 3, the numbering then all needs to change because it goes 1, 2, 2, so we just need to look at that. Thank you.
Investment and all that, it's somewhere repeated 2.4 and 2.5. It will read 2.8. Somehow they must be recrafting so that it's got 1.7. 2.4, if you read it, the issue of the scheme investing in public service corporation in terms of the housing scheme, that the investment guarantee that they have. But also, if you go 2.2, it still talks to that. The only difference, it tells us the amount. So you go to 2.8, the property stress, the issue of interest. If you can take the issue of interest of that 200 grand and the investment scheme, let's make it 1 point. It just needs to be recrafted. That's my suggestion. What do you want, members? Because it's more of the same issue that is scattered around. It must be 1 point that makes sense.
I can live with that.
Okay. I hope it is that end of the
The acting chairperson, Honorable R.M.M. Shoma, declared the meeting officially opened and welcome to everyone. Welcome to everyone.
But, oh, yes, you can see the English now. Right.
Yes, and then on page 4, 2.4, the issues of the scheme investing on the public investment corporation was questioned, and members wanted to know whether public servants are benefiting from this investment. But I've got a problem with the first part of that sentence. Maybe someone could help. The issue of the scheme investing on the public investment corporation sounds a bit funny. I don't know how we can put it, but I think there's something wrong there. But 2.5 as well, Chair.
Yes,
on
that
you allow?
That's the end of the 2.4 and 2.5.
Yes.
I suggested that, and also 2.8,
okay,
be kept as one so that it can make sense.
Okay.
You have some disjuncture.
Thank you
very much. Around in terms of the idea.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Are you fine, and then?
Then at 2.7, the last part of that sentence, it ends with towards savings for the employment instead of saving. Yeah, just put it in the test.
Okay, in that paragraph, honorable member, the other one, which is not numbered, just below 2.8, I'm still using the old numbers, which is still going to be arranged. I'm suggesting that you say outstanding responses were requested to be submitted in writing to the committee, da-da-da-da-da. Does it make sense to go to the back door? Because it's more or less normal part of the committee that you say that one. Not necessarily just because of time, there will be other additional information that needs to be submitted in writing. So that's what the spirit of within that. If we agree, then shall we move to page 5? I will see by show of hand or somebody saying something so that I can also just stop. Yes, it's in order to change the sentence. And also here, I'm suggesting at below 3.7, honorable members, that it should be the same as what I just amended in terms of page 4, in terms of outstanding da-da-da-da-da. Yes, then it should be the same also as well here so that it can be informed. I don't have anything about the page 5 anymore. Silence is golden. Okay, that is done.
It's cosmetic, just as you remarked, the gems should be kept in a consistent.
Oh, yes. Gems should be kept in length of years. Thank you. With that, honorable members, the 2nd of November, managed, we have corrected them. Any new job and
I
move,
Secretary.
Thank you, honorable job for the honorable job. Thank you so much. Then that will bring us to the 9th of November.
Service was not addressed in the public service regulations in order to discourage or minimize in the hiring of the services. 3.2. Yes, yes, we just need to recraft that sentence. While officials are not doing less than their job, it doesn't make sense. It's very common. If you can just recraft
that. Yeah,
recraft
that one because not, because that not changes the whole thing. If there are
Chair, if I might, sorry, next one is on the next page. Thanks.
Okay, so let's change that one. It's a recraft. Yeah, especially you are not, it just changes the whole thing.
On page 5, under 4.3, we also just need some rewording. Let's read the pension payouts. I will just read it quickly.
Yes, please.
Let me just refresh my memory. The record management was the main reason for human resource management divisions in the various departments. But predominantly resulting in delays of pension payouts in the public service. Thanks again, Chair. 5.2, then there's another 5.2. Cosmetic, but important. So 5.3, then after 5.2.
Good to know, yes. Page
2, honorable members. Page 4 from my side, honorable members, 3.6, I am suggesting that the acting chairperson requests the PSC to submit written responses to the committee, or I should have heard the last one, on 23rd, to discuss letters and because that's a standalone one, it's got nothing to do with the PSC. In its next meeting. So discuss the letter. There were no two letters from consultants and there are two letters from Public Service and Commission in its next meeting. Does that make sense for everyone, remember?
Yes,
yeah.
Okay, that brings us to the end of the minute. Any more by the contender?
I'll move to check, thank you.
Honorable Dow, thank you so much. I would like to make your comment. And we are going to the 3rd of November. 23rd, yes. Which is 2 at the page 2. But also, honorable members, just be sure that also we don't omit anyone who had apologized and all that, because it does have an impact in terms of any member performance and standing. It is like we just missing in action. Page 2, honorable members, from my side, I don't have anything. Just the numbering. Correction, that is 31st of Jan 2017, not 16.
I move that we accept the minutes of the 31st of January 2017.
Thank you so much, ma'am. Second, Honorable Velma. Don't look at me if you're here. On this one. You can't. I think we have okay. Yes. But in closing, Honorable, let me just take an appreciation from my side, even the support that I've been enjoying. I don't want to use that far because it has to be like that, because a working relationship is a mutual process. It doesn't happen from one, it's not a one-sided issue. And we'll see our staff. We promise, Master, that you circulate the program of this current quarter that we're in from Jan to March. Also, you will circulate to us, Master, and also Julia. Let's just make sure that we look at the oversight program, not report the program, so that honorable members can input on it, so that all of us are on the same page in terms of what we want to achieve and where what informs where we are going to. The other one also, let's circulate the draft program of the workshop that we are envisaging to have. All that, but I think circulate that because it's got the date and everything. Ensure that all the participants that were expecting to be there, they are informed on time. And also for members' logistics arrangement for them to attend the documentation, we get it on time. So which means from today we need to work backwards. At least we must be relaxed and waiting for those days instead of us working under pressure. And the last one also, Marcel, if you can help us with, is to ensure that these departments, they give us the documents for the committee to also to engage on time. If we've got any problem in 2 weeks before the sitting of the meeting, just also indicate to myself, then we'll make sure that the history doesn't repeat itself. Any comment from our honorable members? May we have a blessed week and see you next week. And also I have a very fruitful, energized,
Thank you. I'm going to walk down the street and see if Lucy is here. He's down here. He's supposed to be between 1 and 1:30. He's supposed to finish. Anyway, we were waiting.